Salams and welcome. You are listening to Loving and Living the Quran. This podcast is about practical spirituality, about how to live the timeless message of the Quran in modern times. Please come back often and share with others as well. This is season 2 and contains recordings of live lectures delivered in Toronto in October 2015.
The inspiration from this, from the ayat of the Quran, from Surah Al-Qalam, where Allah is testifying that indeed the Prophet has the highest level of nobility of character. And there's another ayat in the Quran which tells us to follow the Uswatul Hasana of the Prophet, and it tells us that not only is he an example in religious matters, but he is an example for us to follow in all areas of his life. The Prophet himself said that his message, his mission was to perfect the nobility of character. So taking these three things in mind, we looked at, you know, first of all, what is akhlaq? And we said that akhlaq is the inner disposition of a human being. It is those actions that we do regularly, often unthinkingly, unconsciously, which make up our moral character, right? And we said that it is, development of character is not something incidental. It's actually a very integral part of our deen, because it is the way that we get closer to Him who is the All Pure and the All Holy. So the purer we are, the more Qalbi Saleem that we have, the more purity of heart and peace that we have inside, the more we can connect to Him who is all peace and who is all merciful. So we started talking about, we also talked about what are the ways to, you know, some baby steps to start making changes in our lives. And in essence, basically we start with an intention or an awareness of things that we need to change. We come up with a plan. Then we have, we monitor ourselves in the sense we look at how the plan is going. If it's going well, we do more of it. If it's not going well, we make changes and we re-strategize. But the idea is, again, that if we only hear and don't take action on it, that knowledge is not going to settle. And it's actually going to do nothing for us, except actually it's a heavy burden to bear when we know something and we don't act on it, right? So the idea is that even if we start taking baby steps in a few areas of our life, inshallah, we can make changes as we go along. Salwa. So we started by looking at some of the qualities that the Imams have said that they like within us, right? So they actually described what makarimul akhlaq looks like. And again, when we're talking about makarimul akhlaq, it means an akhlaq based on karam. Karam is something which is not reactive. So it's not something like you do good for me and I do good for you. It is actually a proactive kind of behavior. It means that I base my character and I base my actions on values, on things that I believe, on iman, on faith, rather than on social exchange or what anyone else does for me, right? So it is very internal. It comes from within ourselves. We talked about and we know that the Imam has actually given us a blueprint in a sense. He told us that there are 11 characteristics that make up makarimul akhlaq, and we've been going through some of them. We started out with the quality of contentment, we talked about generosity, we talked about patience, we talked about gratitude. Right. So again, and we know that all of these qualities obviously build upon each other. So today, inshallah, the quality we will look at is courage. Now, courage is an extremely important quality. Why? Because a lot of people say that actually courage is the foundation. In the sense, even if we know a lot of things, if we don't have a foundation of courage, we cannot take action on what we know. Right. So today, inshallah, the agenda is basically we will look at what is courage. We will talk a little bit about the opposite of courage in the sense, and we know that in order to understand something really well, the Prophet has taught us that we need to look at its opposite, or what is what happens when it's missing, right? So the opposite of courage we know is either fear or cowardice. We will try to understand a little bit of where fear comes from and what it does to us. We'll talk a little bit about types of courage and why it is so important to take courageous acts, and then inshallah we will spend a few minutes on how to develop it. So that's, you know, basically the framework. Now, courage according to Islamic ethics or to ilm al-akhlaq is the midpoint, or it's the mean between fear and recklessness. Okay, and this, by the way, is very much like even when you look at Aristotelian ethics, which is the foundation of where Western character comes from, or the base, it's very, very similar, right? So it's the mean between fear and recklessness. So basically a reckless person, or in Islamic literature, they call foolhardy, they enter into dangerous or deadly situations despite the warnings of both reason and religion. In other words, they have very little fear, okay? Reckless men take unnecessary risk with excessive confidence in the face of danger. And obviously, actually, we are forbidden to behave like this, because the Quran tells us that cast not yourselves by your own hands into destruction. In other words, self-preservation is not only makes sense as a human species, but it is our moral obligation. Like, we are not supposed to put ourselves in harm's way unless and until it is for a higher cause, right? The other spectrum is being cowardly. Being cowardly means that timidity under circumstances which call for action. In other words, cowards are those who let their fear stop them from doing what they know they must. Okay, so it's not a lack of knowledge, but it is a lack of taking action in the face of fear. Now, courage is the balance between these two. So courage means that a person actually, first of all, recognizes the danger. So it's not that they just jump without thinking about it. So they recognize the danger. They actually look at all sides. So it's not a question of just, obviously, there's some times where you just have to, yes, there is something burning. So, can we have a salwa? So, it means that you take a look at the pros and cons, you actually look at the situation, you prepare. So it doesn't mean that you do things just to jump in. It means that you assess the situation and yet you take action to move forward. Okay? So a very important thing that comes out of this is that courage is not the absence of fear. You know, often the way it's written, even in the way Islamic literature is translated, it will often say that people are fearless, you know, that we should be fearless. But we'll talk a little bit about, you know, how fear is a human instinct and it is unreasonable for us. I'll tell you what the problem with thinking like that is. The problem with thinking like that is that if I think that I must be fearless before I can take action, it's actually going to stop me, right? When I recognize that, you know what, even the most courageous people, they feel the fear and they yet choose to act, it's a very different outcome, because I know I'm not stopping for a feeling before I will take action, right? Now, what is fear exactly and what are the kinds of fear? So fear and khawf, again, in Islamic literature we are taught, are of two kinds. One is the fear of Allah. Now, the fear of Allah includes disobedience, it includes the impact of our actions, you know, what is going to come out of our actions, how we are going to be judged, all of those things, right? And there's a lot of, it's talked about a lot, obviously, in the Quran, and that we are told and we know is a good thing, in the sense that, in fact, it's related to knowledge and ma'rifah. So the more knowledge and ma'rifah I have of Allah, my fear and khashiyah of Him is actually going to increase. The reason being why? Because obviously I am much more conscious of my actions. I am much more conscious when I'm falling short. So, you know, sometimes we say ignorance is bliss, right? So in this sense, it's not bliss, but it's certainly more comfortable. Right? It's comfortable because I don't even know, if I'm just going about living my life, I'm not really conscious of where all I'm falling short. The minute I start paying attention and thinking, say, let's even think about the environment, right? A few years ago, we never thought about it. So life was pretty comfortable. We didn't really care how many, you know, styrofoam cups we threw in the garbage, right? Now that we are aware of it, obviously it's a very uncomfortable place to be because we recognize how every action is having so much of an impact, right? So khashya of Allah is very much like that, in the sense that whenever we recognize, you know, the more our awareness of Him grows, the more our awareness of ourselves grow, we keep becoming more and more aware or have this khashya inside us. Now this khashya is obviously not something to get rid of. It is, in fact, they say that so it works both ways. The more your khashya is, the more spiritually elevated you will be. And the more spiritually elevated you are, obviously you are going to have more khashya, right? Now, the next big area of fear is fear of everything other than Allah. Now, this could be anything. So all of us have different fears. Right, all of us. I don't know anybody who's completely fearless. Right, so we may have really minor fears like going into a dark room, or we may fear the end of the world, or we may fear whatever. Right, but the idea is that this actually, again, you know, we'll talk a little bit about how this is hardwired into our psychology. But let's go back to our fear of Allah. Even in that, even in the khashya of Allah, which we are supposed to nurture and inculcate, there has to be a balance, right? Because if there is only fear, what happens? If I only have fear of God, what will happen? It's actually immobilizing, right? Because you won't act, because you're so scared that you are paralyzed. You know, we've heard this thing about paralyzed with fear. So we are told that a mu'min is baina khawfa wa raja. Yani means what? That a mu'min, a believing person, is in between fear and hope. Okay? We're also told that fly to Allah with the wings of hope and fear. In other words, that fear and hope have to be balanced equally in our lives. If they're two wings, obviously they have to be balanced, right? What does that mean? So hope is, again, it is the ultimate motivator for any action, right? If I don't think that my action is going to have any impact, why would I do that action? Like, sometimes we do, but, you know, reason and intellect suggest that if I don't, and in fact what happens is that sometimes when we overdo the fear, and this is very good information to use with our children as well, that when we overdo the fear of Allah, what happens is that if you come to a state of hopelessness, there is a big danger that people will run the other way. Why? Because if I believe that, you know what, I can't succeed with Him in any case, then I will tell myself, why will I try, number one. Number two, I will say, listen, you know, that life's gone anyway, why not just party here? Right? So it actually, and we see a lot of people like that, those who've been brought up with the hell and brimstone variety of Islam, for example, do rebel, right? They say, you know what, there's just no hope of anyone going to heaven or succeeding in the hereafter, so why not just at least enjoy this life? This is what we know, right? So again, it's, and even for ourselves, when we feel that kind of hopelessness or we feel that excess of fear, we need to remember that we need to balance it. And again, if you look at the Quran, it is very much balanced about, you know, Allah will keep saying, fear me, and then He keeps saying, but I am the all merciful, right? And there's a lot of talk about Allah's forgiveness as well. And again, as far as He is concerned, what is more, His wrath or His mercy?
Mercy.
Mercy, for sure, right? So we need to be very clear with that is our ultimate hope. Our ultimate hope is what? That he doesn't need to, but He has written mercy upon Himself. And He has told us in His own words that my mercy overtakes my wrath. Okay? So, now let's get back to fear of everything except Allah.
Sometimes I feel it's also the intention. So if all the time we feel that must, we have to be very careful.
Okay, that's a very good point. We do have to be very careful. Why? Because the only thing with His mercy is that we cannot take it for granted. That's the main thing. And again, when we keep, and that's why the whole thing about balance, right? So the hope has to be balanced with fear too. So if only hope and no balance and no fear, then what's going to happen? Then we are completely complacent, right? And by the way, you know, on an unrelated point, but I think it is important to bring up, is that the way Shaitan works is very interesting. Okay, so what Shaitan does is that he tries to upset this balance of hope and fear. So for example, before we take action, what will he give us? Hope. What will he say? You know what, Allah is all merciful, you know, it's okay, everyone does it, just do it, go ahead, all of these things, right? Once we've done it, then what does he put into us? Fear, that you know what, you've lost it, you are doomed, there's no way out, so you might as well continue on this, right? Actually, for a moment, it has to be the complete opposite. So before we have sinned or before we have done anything, that's the time where we need to have a lot of khashya, a lot, right? That's when we really remember that he is the all-accounting, that he will take account for everything. Once we have slipped, and we are human beings, we will slip, I mean that's guaranteed, that's when we remind ourselves of his hope. Does that make sense? So again, I think this is a really powerful thing to understand, because often we get tempted to do something because of our hope. And if we can just remember that that's the time not for hope but for fear, and the time after we've done something when we're feeling hopeless to remind ourselves that of his mercy. Okay. Now, what are some of the types of courage? So often, you know, another thing is, it was interesting when I was preparing for this, we think of courage as a very manly virtue, don't we? Isn't it? So, I know somebody said, you're going to talk about courage, but what does that have to do with women, right? Mm-hmm. And that's because we usually think of only physical courage, isn't it? We think of courage means what? Like if I was to tell you, explain courage to an 8-year-old, what would you say?
Bravery.
Bravery, what else?
Strength.
Right? Sorry?
Inner strength.
Inner strength, exactly. But most of the time we think of like going into a burning building to save children would be an act of courage, right? But the thing is that there are many different types of courage. That's one form of courage for sure. But as we know, and this goes back to what the Prophet taught us, that when he was coming back from the battlefield, what did he say? He said that the greatest jihad is not in the battlefield, is not in physical courage, but it is actually in
nafs,
right? In going against what your lower desires tell you, in basically living up to your full potential, in building your character. Okay. There's also intellectual courage. Intellectual courage means what? Intellectual courage means actually being brave enough to look at some really hard questions in life. Right, to not just accept everything. And by the way, in Islam, we really encourage this. It's not something that, you know, this is not a religion where you just take in whatever anyone's telling you and blind faith, right? Allah keeps saying, I'm inviting you to a religion which is like, it should be intellectually stretching. It should stretch us. So, you know, one of my teachers always used to say, and it's always stayed with me, beware of the clarity that comes before confusion. Let me say that again. Beware of the clarity that comes before confusion. What does that mean? If we have no questions, if we're so clear about everything, like some of us just have that level of faith, right? For most of us, and this is especially true of children and youth as well, and that's why I think it's a good thing to encourage questions. When they question, like even things that make us extremely uncomfortable, it means that they are engaging. It means that they are not just saying, okay, forget it, this is not for me. When you have no questions, it means you're not really engaged with it, right? So questioning is a good thing. You know, how we deal with the question is a whole different thing. But the idea is that, you know, doubt is not a bad thing. The only thing is we don't rest in doubt. Doubt is only damaging when you don't want to move forward, when you've given up, you say, okay, I'm not clear about this and I'm okay with that, right? So again, when young people come and they say that they are very, they are confused and they have a lot of questions and they don't know where to go, the idea is to encourage them to go search. Because if we are so clear that this is the truth, right, what are we afraid of? Right? We need to have that much confidence that whatever this, when they are searching with true intention and an open mind, they will come to the truth. Right? So that is intellectual courage. Moral and social courage is what? It is to stand up for things that we believe are right, to stand up to injustice, and to do that in face of opposition, to do that in face of looking bad in front of people, to become unpopular, to say really difficult things, right? So one line of Thoai Makaramala Clark really stands out all the time is, O Allah, help me speak the truth, though difficult. So it is difficult to stand up, right? Nobody is saying it's easy, but the idea is that is what courage looks like. So there's so many examples of moral courage in particular. One that always stands out is Rosa Parks. I don't know how many of you remember who Rosa Parks is, right? So she's the one who basically started the Black Civil Rights Movement. And the idea was that she was a seamstress, so she used to sew clothes. And one day she went, as she did every day, on the bus. While she was on the bus, you know, the person made an announcement, all the black people in the three rows, they need to get up and either move to a separate bus or move to the back or whatever. So everyone got up and did what they were asked, and she didn't. That is all she did. She was not a great, like, a leader or anything. She was actually a very inspiring leader, but not in the ways that we look at it. And that's what actually started the whole black civil rights movement, like it really brought it to the forefront, right? So it was one act of social and moral courage. There's so many, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, we know all of these, like we're talking about secular figures from modern history. All of them, it took some amount of social courage because they were going against what was the norm at that time, okay? We also have the concept of emotional courage, which sometimes we don't really talk about too much. But in the Quran, for example, it says, and whoever is patient and forgiving, these most surely are acts due to courage. Patient and forgiving. Yani, that when you are forgiving is when you obviously have emotional upsets. So you're feeling bad, right? When you're exercising patience, it is something again that is upsetting you, and yet you are choosing to do the right thing. That is emotional courage. Emotional courage is also being able to deal with strong emotions. In the sense, again, emotions themselves are not a bad thing. They don't need to be suppressed or denied or any of those things, right? So if I'm angry at something, what is my anger telling me? If I look at it in a very different way, my anger is pointing me to what is valuable to me. So for example, we come back to the parking. If I get upset because somebody has taken two parking spots, and I can tell myself, oh, I just need to suppress it, you know, this is such a, it's such a negative emotion. But if I'm in touch with myself, it actually tells me that what I value is people being considerate for other people who have come to attend much less, right? So our emotions are always pointing us to what is valuable in our lives. And once we, you know, come to terms with that, and grief again, you know, we tend to be okay with expressing griefs in majalis, but when it comes to being with grieving people, we find it very hard to just be with it rather than trying to make it instantly better. You know, so often when people who've gone through a really hard time, what they would say is that you don't need to fix anything because you actually can't at that time, right? You can only be with them and just bear witness to their pain. That's pretty much it. And that takes a lot of emotional courage. Why? Because at that point, we want to make it better. We want to do something other than just sit and watch, watch people suffer, right? So now what happens when you are courageous in the face of fear? So there's a lovely passage in the Quran about the Battle of Uhud. So what happened in the Battle of Uhud, we won't go into the whole history, but basically, you know, there were these people, the army of Islam, and they actually suffered quite a big defeat, right? So in Surah Ali Imran, this chapter starts from Ayah 172. Allah is talking about them, and He's saying those who responded to the call of Allah and the Messenger after suffering defeat, who do good and remain conscious of Allah, will have a great reward. Those whose faith only increased when people said to them, "People have gathered against you, so fear them." And who replied, "Allah is enough for us, He is the best protector." They returned with grace and bounty from Allah, and no harm befell them. They pursued the pleasure of Allah, and Allah is the Lord of mighty grace. It is only the shaitan that causes you to fear from his friends, and do not fear them, and fear me if you are believers. So what do we learn from this? First of all, that being connected to Allah and to a bigger purpose, like a purpose outside yourself, will give you courage. Okay, number one. Number two, outcome of persevering with courage is seldom as bad as we think. So when we have this big, something that we're fearing, and you know, when we come in a little bit, this will become hopefully much more concrete. But when we are fearing something, it is much bigger than it actually is. In fact, fear is often called false evidence appearing real, F-E-A-R, right? So when something looks very big and you still have the courage and you face it, it suddenly does not seem as big as you thought it was, right? And what this ayat also says is that people will seldom encourage you. They will actually tell you, you know what, this thing is very big, so you can't face it. And yet, if you face it, Allah's help will be with you. And lastly, that shaitan's job is to cause fear in our hearts, right? That's his job. So let him do his job and we need to do ours, right? Which is to tell him, okay, fine, you know, heard you, but I'm going to move ahead anyway, okay? So what are some of the attributes, or what do courageous people look like? So we've been talking about this already. First of all, they feel the fear and yet they choose to act. So it is not fearlessness. I need to keep repeating that because it often, very often stops us, right? We think once we have the confidence to do something, we will do that. But confidence actually comes from doing. So if you're just waiting for the confidence, it's actually never going to happen, okay? They take an honest look at themselves. So this is a big act of courage, right? Big act of courage means what are my gifts and what are my challenges, both. So we're very good at looking what our problems are and what needs to be fixed, right? But if I don't recognize my gifts and why I have been put on this planet, if I don't have a sense of my purpose, then what am I leaving behind? And what is my life going to mean, right, when it's at the end? So they stand up for what is right. Obviously, we talked about that. They have the courage to say no. This is a very important part of courage, and it's a very important part of living up to your full potential. Why? Because all of us have very limited resource, which is time. You know, it's said that time is a great equalizer. It's the only thing that we can't make, right? So if I'm saying yes to everything, if I'm saying yes to every person's agenda for my life, I don't have time to do what I am here to do. And it's as simple as that. So courage requires that not only do I need to know what to say yes to, but I really need to know what to say no to. It's not easy, you know, it's really not easy, especially when we're trained to have this belief that we have to please everyone all the time, right? They have the courage to say, "I'm sorry." So again, the idea that I have made a mistake is an act of courage to recognize that, because it's hard to know when you've caused pain to somebody, right? But a courageous person will recognize that and will say sorry without the but. What do I mean by that? "I am sorry I yelled at you, but." So when we say but, what have we done? We've actually negated everything that we've said before that. We've justified our behavior. So the person who we are so-called apologizing to is actually left worse than when we started apologizing, right? So please, if we take away nothing else, at least we can learn to apologize in a way that is courageous. And it is courageous to accept responsibility for what we've done and let it go at that, okay? The courageous people are really okay with failure. So any one of us who's done anything in life knows that failure is part of the equation, right? If we have never failed in life, it means we've never really done anything in life. Because anything worth doing will have setbacks. Anything worth doing. And if we think that, you know, I really do need to speak about this, it's difficult, but we have this idea of perfection all the time, isn't it? It's something told to us all the time that we need to strive to be perfect. Good. I think we have perfect role models for sure, right? How about the, I don't know about you, the problem with always hearing the word perfection for myself is that, again, I find it immobilizing. I find that it is a destination, it is something out there, which how do I achieve? Like, I know I can never achieve it, right? Sometimes what works a lot better is if we just change the thinking a little bit and think about the pursuit of excellence rather than perfection. It sounds very little, very similar, but there is a difference. Perfection is an outcome, isn't it? Perfect is an outcome. And is the outcome ever in my hands? Ever? No, the outcome is always in God's hand. So I am trying for something which is not in my control. When I am trying for excellence, it actually is in my control because it is not outcome, it's process. It's actually doing the right or doing what is something to the best of my ability in every moment of my life. That is excellence, right? So is that achievable?
Yes.
Extremely. So again, you know, if perfection works for you, great. But, you know, if it doesn't, then, you know, there's something that we can do instead, right? So another thing with failure is that failure, like I said, is a result of trying something. The thing of not trying something, like, okay, let's talk about the life's purpose and then we... So when the ulama of akhlaq talk about courage, you know, one of the vices of this whole area is called diffidence. A very strange word, not something we use very often, right? But diffidence, let me explain, is lacking confidence or trust in oneself. It is being shy, bashful, not able to take a stand because of a lack of confidence. It means a feeling of inferiority which results in not making an effort to reach the heights of perfection open to the human being and being content with lower and rudimentary attainments. It is one of the consequences of self-depreciation. So when I read this, sometimes it occurs to me that as women, we are often encouraged to be all of these things, right? We think that it means that I am modest, if I'm self-effacing, if I'm bashful, if I'm timid, if I'm shy, right? But, you know, when we look at it, if all of those things are stopping me from fulfilling what Allah has given me as a talent and a gift, is that a good thing or a bad thing? So let's look at it in this way. I know some of us, I see England, right? There used to be a show on TV called Ready, Steady, Cook. Anyone know about that? I think here there's something similar called Chopped, but it's actually not similar. It's not, I'll tell you why. So in Ready, Steady, Cook, there were two teams and they were both given a bag of groceries like they do in Chopped. The difference was that in Chopped, it's the same bag of groceries, right? In Ready, Steady, Cook, it was actually everyone was given different things. So you never knew what was in your bag. And the way you were judged was what you made, the best that you made out of your ingredients. Okay? Unbelievable concept. Why? Because our life is like that. Right? All of us have been given completely different talents and gifts which we need to make the best use of to present as a finished product on the Day of Judgment, right? Now, diffidence stops us from doing that. Why? Because it, you know, because we think that we're not self-confident, that we don't have what it takes, okay? So let's take a few examples. All of us have what is called a someday list. Does everyone have a someday list? Do you understand what I'm saying? Right? We have a list where we will do something someday when we have the time, the energy, the, you see what I mean, right? And it's usually related to my life purpose and my gifts. Usually, not always. So let's take a few examples and then we'll do something really concrete. Hopefully that will make sense, okay? So some of the things that might be on my someday list would be, I want to start a support group for mothers of children with special needs. I want to do something about the fact that many youth are finding it hard to find suitable spouses. I want to gather family recipes from all the great cooks in my family, like my grandmother, aunt, etc., and have it published. I want to start a small community garden in my child's school, which would teach them about sustainable agriculture and where their food comes from. Okay, so these are four very different things. Yours might be something completely different, but the idea is to have something concrete in our minds so that we can actually work with it. Okay, so if this sounds fine to you, pick any of them or actually choose something which will make sense for you. Okay, now all of these more or less concrete dreams are basically the essentially good. That's the first thing, right? In the sense that they are making a positive impact in the world. It can be very, very small. So we're not talking about big things. We're talking about, you know, publishing maybe an ebook of recipes or starting with three people, a group or whatever. It can be anything. Then they are connected to the gifts that I've been given in some ways. So either I have the desire to do it, I have some skill that will help me do it, or at least I know where to source the skill, right? So for example, if I was to tell you that I want to start a chemistry lab in Guyana, like that would not be a suitable life purpose for me. Why? Because I have neither the skills nor the, no, nothing. Like, so again, it has to be something within your thing. And they're all bigger than myself. So it's not about me. It has to be a purpose which is bigger than myself. So now what happens is that I have this purpose and I have a wall in front of the purpose. Now the wall is a wall of fear. Okay? It's a wall of fear, and on that wall are sitting many demons. You know, all these little, I picture them as like little gremlins, but you can picture them as whatever. Okay? Now on this side of the wall is me wanting what's on the other side of the wall, right? Except that I'm very safe here. Like where I am, it's completely safe. I'm having a good life. There's nothing wrong, except that my yearning is to be on the other side. Like that's what I really want. So what are some of the things that comprise the wall? And it's sometimes different for everyone, right? So what are the gremlins telling you? I'll tell you what they tell me, okay? It is scary out there. You're not good enough. You don't know enough. If you get it wrong, people will laugh. People will criticize. What if you fail? You will fail for sure. There's no hope. What if you succeed? You're not ready. You don't have time. It won't be perfect. It's not worth doing. Does any of this sound familiar? Right. Not only are they negative, but these are the things that are standing between us and what we are wanting, right?
There's also one I always get, which is, this is not the right time.
This is not the right time, exactly. So magically, there will be a time in the future. It's always in the future, right? There will be magically a time where things that I need will come together. I will have time. I will have all the skills that I need. Guess what? That time will always be in the future. Always. Like that's an unattainable goal, right? So despite the fact that I'm very safe here, and you know, there's a wonderful quote which says that ships are safe in harbor. They are, right? They don't get damaged, nothing happens. But ships are not built for the harbor. So even though I am very safe and content here, the idea is that if I have something to share with the world, I need to ignore those gremlins. I need to accept that this is the wall that is there. I need to find the door in the wall, and I need to open it and walk through, despite what the gremlins are telling me. And that is courage. The courage is not the absence of the wall, it's not the absence of the gremlins, and it's not all of these things, right? Courage is only having the courage to actually open the door and walk through. And guess what? Once you start making progress, then like we saw in examples of the Quran, that things are not as big as they seem. The only way through fear is actually through it. Like, you can talk yourself out of it, you can imagine, you know, it not being there, but, you know, none of those things actually work. So again, when we see examples, even from history, right, when, say, Mother Teresa started out, do you think that she knew what the whole picture was going to look like? No. What did she do? She just started taking action, right? So again, without action, and again, so perfection is a destination, excellence is the journey, right? So if we just focus on the journey, we just focus on taking the next step. What is the next step I can do to live my potential? What is the next step that I can do? It really does help. And, you know, we can literally befriend the gremlins. Like, the gremlins are not going to go away. So in order to do anything, you can just tell the gremlins, yeah, 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 got you, got you. You know, I've heard that before. I've heard that before, that, you know, I'm not going to make it, and I'm not clever enough, and people will laugh, and all that. And you just say, okay, you know what? You do your thing, I do my thing. Okay? Can we have a salwa?
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad wa Jir Faraj.
So, just to put it again, what we do every day is to put the thoughts, feelings and actions of the quality that we are talking about, right? So, what are the thoughts of courage? What are the thoughts? If you had courage, what are some of the ways you would be thinking?
I can do it.
Excellent. What else? Yeah, so you would, self-confidence would be a feeling, and what would be the thought behind the feeling? I can do it. Great. So those are the things. Failure is okay. Failure is just feedback. It tells me that I'm taking action. It tells me that, you know, I'm on the way, right? Any of these things. Feelings would be, again, a feeling of self-confidence, a feeling of self-worth, that I am intrinsically worth something. That's why God put me here. Extremely important, right? If we weren't worth anything, Allah would not waste his time with us, right? So we have intrinsic worth by virtue of the fact that we are here. The fact that we are here means that we are here to do something. We are here to make some difference, and it can be very, very small. It can be that I want to be the best person in my family, right? I want to be the one that brings people together. It can be, you know, your life purpose doesn't have to be in flash. What is it called?
You don't have to be on CNN.
You don't have to be on CNN, for sure, right? And what are the actions of courage?
Doing the right thing, speaking the right thing.
Any action. Pick it, right? So again, the idea is, forget about taking the right action, move. You know, when you start moving towards your goal, you'll figure out what's the right action. So, you know, there's the thing we always say, ready, aim, fire, ready, aim, fire, right? Someone like me, I will spend a lot of time aiming, a lot. Like, I will make myself ready, aim. By the time I fire, the target has moved, right? So I will never hit it. So what successful people do instead? They ready, fire, aim. Ready, fire, aim means what? That you take action, it doesn't work, you try again. How many times did Einstein, fail? But he never thought of it as failing. He never ever thought of it as failing, right? He just thought, okay, I'm getting feedback. That didn't work. That didn't work. He was just doing what he was doing, right? He was in the pursuit of excellence. If he had been, can you imagine if he had thought of perfection?
And even the law of energy he found was not what he was looking for.
Exactly.
Just something he stumbled on.
That's a very good point. So again, when we are taking action, we don't need to see the full staircase. We really don't. Because what's on top of the staircase, I promise you, is way beyond what your imagination is right now. And look at anyone in your life or in history who's done great things. They didn't start out to be great. They were only climbing the one step, right? So Mother Teresa didn't want to be a saint. She only wanted to help the people around. So that's a very good point, that you don't have to see the end result. You only have to do what you have to do, okay? So salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraj.
So we are here today to commemorate a family who showed us what...
Thanks for listening. If you found the podcast useful, please visit www.marziahassan.com for a lot more resources on practical spirituality and tools to strengthen families. Oh, and if you liked what you heard, hop onto iTunes and rate our podcast to help share the message with more people. Until next time, salam alaikum, and may the peace and blessings of Allah be with you.